Good morning, everyone. And welcome, everyone, to final week, week seven of Precious Moments, working on time management based on values. First of all, just a little review from last week. Last week, we talked about managing our time and how it relates to other people. So we talked about letting people know, the people that are close to us particularly, letting them know what our time management plan is, letting them know if we've shifted our mindset and designated or blocked off certain time to spend on certain valuable ideas, then we need to let people know so that we don't become upset with the interruptions and they know what to expect and the expectations around us are clear and we generate a sort of sense of calmness that way. We talked about respecting other people's time management plans. So we'll be working on the quadrant two experiences and therefore expecting that other people will respect when we're in quadrant two mode and working on those things that are based on our values and do the same for others. So when others have locked off time to work on things that are really important to them, to try and not undermine that, try and not interrupt that. As we spoke about last week, the whole idea of interruptions takes a lot longer than the interruption. And therefore, we set certain boundaries and certain disciplines and we ask people to respect ours and we need to respect them. And in that context, we also talked about when someone is waiting for us and the whole idea of punctuality and the idea of punctuality in the context of respect and respecting people's time. In fact, I didn't say this last week, but there's a famous concept in Jewish ethics that if you steal something from someone, it's replaceable. In other words, it's a transgression, but you can repair it. You can repair it by giving it back. Time is the only thing that if you steal, it's hard to give back. I mean, you can't give it back, right? And that therefore concept of wasting other people's time or respecting other people's time becomes so much more important. Okay, so that's sort of last week's topic where we talked about how our time management plan relates to other people. Now today I want to put it all together and end with a few thoughts. But before we put it all together, I just want to touch on a few little time management concepts that we haven't highlighted till now, which are relevant and sort of help us implement some of the strategies that we've been talking about till now. Firstly, someone shared with me a beautiful article last week. You know, we spoke in the beginning about technology and how it's so wonderful and it has brought so many opportunities in terms of communication and in terms of how we access other people, in terms of efficiency. But at the same time, we need to always determine who controls what. Are we controlling the technology or is the technology controlling us? And someone shared with me a beautiful article which was written by someone who took their family away on a holiday for 2 weeks, and the deal was with the kids, 14-year-olds, which I don't know how they did that, it's pretty good, and there was no technology for the 2 weeks, no Facebook, no computers, no nothing, and actually found, I mean, amazingly, that they actually interacted with each other, people started to talk to each other, spend time with each other, and the article makes reference to, I went online, actually, there's a whole movement that happened now in America, it's called Unplugging, where people have discovered, listen to this, they've discovered a new concept, it's called Shabbos. They've asked people to unplug, to try this unplugging concept, and they've taken it from the Jewish concept of Shabbos, and they talk about unplugging from Friday afternoon till Saturday evening, right? So, great innovative thought. But they found that it's actually amazing. So, and I think it's a very, very powerful thing where sometimes we need to impose upon ourselves, or in the concept of Judaism, sometimes it's imposed on us, which is this concept of actually just switching off. Meaning that if we want to, the way it works is as follows, and this is the principle. If when we use something, we want to make sure that we are in control of it and it is not in control of us, the only way to do that is to prove to ourselves and to go through an experience where every so often we don't engage with it at all. In other words, if you have to engage with something all the time or every day, then that's the first sign that you're addicted to it and therefore it controls you and you don't control it. Right? And that's true with everything. It's true with technology, it's true with communication, it's true with emotions like guilt and worry and all these kinds of things. The ability to switch off something is the first sign that you are in control. And that's why this unplugging thing was an interesting concept, where people have realized that the value of actually switching off, of actually not having an imposed time, which in a Jewish concept, of course, coincides very beautifully with the whole idea of Shabbos, where you actually switch off from the week. Because, you know, when it comes to Shabbos, for example, if you look in the Torah, the concept of Shabbos is an interesting concept. When the Torah talks about Shabbat, the verse goes, 6 days a week you shall work, and the seventh day you shall rest, right? And the commentaries talk about this idea, why does the Torah have to talk about 6 days a week you shall work? In other words, is that part of the mitzvah, that you've got to work for 6 days? And they say, yeah, it is. In other words, the mitzvah is not just the Shabbos, the mitzvah is the 6 days. Because God designed the world where we do have to work. In other words, work not just to work hard, but work in the concept of creating, of engaging in innovation, in doing something new. Because if you understand the concept of Shabbos, for example, the laws that govern Shabbos, actually, it's nothing to do with hard work. It's got more to do with creativity, right? And if you're familiar with this, but this concept of, you know, even if you adhere strictly to the laws of Shabbos, it's actually permissible to schlep a very heavy table from one room to another. You're not actually, that's not, even though it might be hard work, and it might be, but if you have guests and you need a table, you're allowed to schlep a table. But yet, lighting a match could be an issue. Why? Because, or is an issue, because the definition of the laws of Shabbos is we need to stop creating. But the Torah says, you need to stop creating because during the week you have to create. Just as God created, we have to create as well. We have to engage in things that are new, things that are creative, things that are innovative, because that's part of the design. We have to improve on the world. When God created the world, He created an imperfect world and wanted us to perfect it. And therefore, the elevating of the world through the 6 days of work and creativity and engaging in that sort of innovative, creative process is actually a very, very important part of the process, as long as it doesn't start to control us. And therefore, the mitzvah is 6 days a week you shall work, but in order to prove that you are in control of the process, the seventh day you switch off. And the same thing is with technology. We touched on this, but it's an important idea. Technology is a God, like everything, is a godly created idea. Every innovation, every invention, man is only a conduit. We are only just God's emissary, so to speak. And when God allows us to reveal new technology or invent new things, part of fundamental Jewish thought is we believe that's a God-given gift, right? So as generations progress and new innovative inventions are created and achieved, that's all part of God's plan. And because it's part of God's plan, it cannot be bad. It's got to be something that is good. It's got to be something that can enhance our existence. It's got to be something that we could use to make ourselves a better person and a better world. And it's powerful tools. And the more powerful it is, the greater good we can do, provided it doesn't become destructive. And therefore, the very thing that God said is good, God says, but you've got to switch off once in a while. Because when you switch off, then you're in control, and then when you use it, it becomes a constructive, positive process rather than a negative one. So I thought that was an interesting little take on the things that we've discussed. Okay, one area we didn't discuss when we talk about time management is the idea of delegation. Now, delegation is a very, very hard thing. Why is it a hard thing? It's a hard thing because delegation is not just a strategy. Delegation is a philosophy. Why do I say that? Because we've been talking about the concept of time management based on values. Which means we go right back to the beginning, where we talk about our time management based on our mission statement, on our goals and our values that we have a direction for in life. Right? And part of those values means that not just to become more effective or productive, we need to learn to delegate, but it actually becomes part of the value, and I'll tell you why. One of the reasons that people don't delegate is why? Because control. Right. Control and lack of trust. Right? Because if I want something done, so of course I know how to do it best, right? And therefore, I'm going to do it myself. I don't want you to do it, number one. And if I do want you to do it, I'm going to hover around you doing it all the time. I'm going to do it myself. Because obviously you're not going to do it as well. You're not going to do it exactly the way I want it to be done. And therefore I'm going to get involved in what you're doing and undermine you and undermine myself. And we're both going to waste time instead of both saving time, right? So Delegation is a very, very important part of time management when we talk about time management based on values. It's the learning to trust other people. It's the learning to understand that we're not in control. It's the learning to understand that we don't have to be involved in everything. We have a mission in life, and every one of us has our mission. And if we're not meant to do something, if someone else can do it, then it's not ours to be done. Now, that doesn't mean that we abdicate responsibility. Some people, by the way, manage delegation very badly. They delegate everything, even the things that they're supposed to be doing. Right? that's reverse delegation. That's bad delegation, right? And then, of course, it derails into sort of a blaming game and why didn't you do it? Well, I was supposed to do it. I delegated it. You know, I'm a good delegator. So I gave it to someone else and they were supposed to do it. So it's their fault. So it's about understanding what our values are. It's about understanding what our mission is, how those values translate and the things we're supposed to be doing. And then the things that don't need to be done by ourselves are not related to our values, but they could be done by other people, and they could be done by other people who it might be more relevant to their values. Sometimes it's important that other people do it because it's important for us to let other people learn certain responsibilities, like with children. I've heard parents complain about their children don't help. And when you explore it, sometimes reasons they don't help because you don't let them. Because you want them to do it exactly the way you would do it. Right? So you want them to help out cleaning a particular part of the house, but they didn't do it exactly the way you do it, so you end up doing it yourself. So of course they don't want to do it. Right? So delegation is about letting other people do things. It's about losing control, letting go of control. It's about letting other people assume responsibility and trusting them. And even if they make a mistake, and even if they don't do it exactly the way that you want you to do it, or even if they have a particular different style, it's about learning how to let go. It's a very difficult thing to do. Especially if you have that problem of control, right? But so it's a very, very important part. And I think that's why I thought it was critical to bring it in, because it certainly enhances time management. Because if we learn how to delegate effectively, then we learn how to, first of all, we become much more efficient. Because if we can let go and then just check in at the end and it's done and it's fine and the world didn't fall apart, even though it was done a little bit differently than when I would do it. So certainly it increases productivity and efficiency, but it also strengthens our values. It strengthens trust of other people, strengthens that letting go of control. Now, finally, another concept of time management that I wanted to bring in sort of as we put it all together is trusting not only us, not only other people, but learning to trust ourselves. What do I mean by that? One of the most strongest concepts of managing our time properly is learning to become decisive. To make decisions, right? Not to let things linger. Now, some of the time we don't do that because we don't trust ourselves. We're not sure if we're going to make... And different people, by the way, express this in different ways. Some people take 17 weeks to buy a washing machine because they just cannot decide like what brand is the best one. You know those people who do research like they do a PhD thesis on like what is the most productive washing machine or car for that matter, whatever the case is, right? You know. The one I love is people that spend all the money on petrol to drive out to Whoop Whoop because they buy a washing machine that's $10 cheaper. Yeah. They forgot, of course, that they spent $15 on the extra gas, but it doesn't matter. Right? Because often it comes from the fact that people don't make decisions because they don't trust themselves. How about if I make a bad decision? Now, of course, with the washing machine, it's not terrible if we do make a mistake, but even with relationship things. Should I do this? Shouldn't I do this? Should I speak to that person? Shouldn't I speak to that person? Should I invite that person? Shouldn't I invite that person? Sometimes we just need to trust ourselves. And trust ourselves means that we learn to become decisive. Something comes up, we think about it, and a responsible person should think about things. We shouldn't be impulsive. We shouldn't be instinctive. We should think things through. A functional human being begins with a proper, respectful thought process that governs our emotions. We shouldn't be animalistic. We shouldn't be just do things ad hoc. But we think about it, we make a decision, and we act upon it. I saw once a beautiful formula on a time management video that was coming from a bit of a different angle, but it's the same idea. It's about not cluttering our desks, right? Or not cluttering our work areas. And they talked about... I'm talking here, yeah. Oh, I don't know. I don't have the video, but it was a long time ago. But I'll share with you the formula. The formula goes like this. It's F-A-R-D. Right? If you get something in the mail, you know how some people let mail like sit there for like weeks and weeks? Because they're actually not sure what to do. I don't know what to do with this piece of paper. Right? I used to be terrible at that. I mean, I'm not perfect yet, but we're getting a lot better. Right? Because you open it up, oh, I'll take care of that later. Tomorrow it comes up again, no, I haven't got time now, I'll take care of it again, right? So there's a formula that goes like this, F-A-R-D. F stands for file. In other words, if you don't want to act in it, if it's not relevant to you now, file it away somewhere. If you think you're going to need it in 7.5 years from now, so just put it away in a filing cabinet, know where it is, so you have a system, so it's there. But don't let it stick in your face, because it creates a sense of overwhelming. There's so much to do, there's so much clutter all over the place, so many files, so many papers, so many bills, right? So either you got to, when something comes to you, you've got to do one of four things. Either file it away, or A stands for act, do something about it, pay the bill, fill in the form, make the phone call, make the decision, whatever the case is, but act. Don't let it linger on the desk or on the counter or in front of you. R is refer, delegate. In other words, if you don't think it's got to do with you, but it does have to do with someone else, get it out to the person that needs to do it. Or, this is very hard for Jewish, or very hard for Jewish people to do, discard or dump. Throw it away. Right. Discard or dump or whatever it depends. Now, it sounds like just a very, very practical strategy, but again, it has to do with how we are with ourselves. We don't trust ourselves a lot of times because we're scared of making a mistake. We're scared of feeling, we're scared of doing things wrong. Sometimes it's laziness, sometimes it's procrastination, whatever the case is. But part of time management is learning to become decisive, to make decisions. And knowing that there will be some times that we make the wrong decision, and that's fine. We have permission, we are allowed to make decisions that are wrong. As long as we tried our best, as long as we did think it through, and we came up with a conclusion, and we acted upon it, or we referred it, or we delegated, or we discarded, or whatever the case is, and then in the one time out of a few times we find maybe it was the wrong thing to do, that's fine. We move on. We can make a mistake, we can fix it, and we can do it. But if we just get involved in the sort of things that we just cannot make decisions on, we end up becoming part of a very complicated network of so many unfinished things that we develop a sense of overwhelmness and we just sort of can't move forward. So the concept of delegation is a very, very important one, and the idea of becoming firm and decisive and trusting ourselves. So really it's about trusting other people and trusting ourselves, which are all two very important components in moving forward. Okay. So at this point, let's put it all together and then we're going to end with something. So we started the series with the whole idea of time management based on values. And we talked about the sanctification of time, that God created space and time. I'm just going to sort of summarize the whole thing. God created space and time, and just as we elevate and we perfect the environment, the space around us, so too we're supposed to value our time, perfect our time, sanctify our time, and make our time work for us and be valuable. Make every day be something of value. As I told you, the famous verse where it says about Abraham, that Abraham and Sarah, Abraham and Sarah were zaken, they were old, but Baba Yamim, they were coming with their days. Every day was accounted for, every day they had what to show, every day was filled with something of meaning and purpose. And the way to do that, we talked about beginning with, this is a very, very important one, if you haven't done it, it's a really important thing to begin with, a personal mission statement. To actually write down, what are our overall values, based on our overall values, what are our overall goals, what do we want life to look at, and it's not something that we do once and we never do it again. Something we have to revisit. We revisit it once a year, once a month, or once every so often to understand what is our overall direction, what's the goal, what's the long-term goal. And then we talked about dividing it into these four quadrants. I still think this is one of the most powerful formulas, and if this is the only thing we learn and we implement, this is great. Quadrant one is the quadrant of necessity. Those are things that are urgent that we cannot help. The main one where we want to live is quadrant two, right? The quadrant of effectiveness, the quadrant of... Those are the activities that are based on our values. Those are the ones, that this is the quadrant that is linked with our mission statement. It's the things that are important to us, our relationships, our families, our roles, our self-development, our self-learning, our spiritual development, our growth, All these things fall into quadrant two, and this is where we want to live most of the time. How do we do that? We talked about minimizing and making smaller quadrant three, which is the urgent but not important, the quadrant of deception. Learning how to say no, no is a proactive word, setting boundaries, creating a discipline where we try and get that quadrant as small as possibly can. And of course, to get out of the quadrant four, which is the waste excess quadrant, not important, not urgent. We escape there because we're not living in the moment. We're frazzled by things that have happened before. We're escaping. And the way to get out of that, we talked about the concept of tackling one step at a time, but also learning to live in the moment. Not being frazzled, not being undermined, not being distracted by things that happened before and things that are going to happen, but learning to actually just live in the moment, block off those times. And to do that, we have to plan, right? To do that, we said we've got to have a paradigm shift to start thinking quadrant two, which means when we plan our week, and I think this is, again, a very powerful concept. When you plan the week ahead to make a weekly plan, we often plan because we think of all the quadrant ones that we've got to do. We've got to plan the week thinking quadrant two, blocking off times to deal with those things that fit into our values. That's that big rocks experiment that we did. We've got to block off the big rocks and then let everything else fall into place. And then that overall weekly plan then gets translated into a daily plan where we prioritize, we have our blocked off times to deal with quadrant two, and we try and stick to it, and we have a day, hopefully, that's of meaning. But a day that we prioritize properly, and we make a to-do list that is realistic, that we don't set ourselves up for failure, and that a day that we can hopefully succeed. Now, just to finish this concept, I want us to have a look, and it's on your hand as well, but I want to have a look at the original list. On the very first day, and if you remember this, I asked you, what are the issues to do with time management? And we very quickly came up with a little bit of a list. And let's just go through it to see if we've done everything. It's a good thing. So people talked about organization being a problem of time management. And of course, organization is. But what does it mean to be organized? Right. So organized, again, takes a certain discipline. We talked about the chesed and gevurah idea. So we have to, obviously, effective time management requires that discipline and sticking to a particular direction. But it's not about sticking to a schedule, it's about sticking to our values. Right? So to create organization effectively, we've got to go all the way back. It's not just about making a nice, proper schedule for the day. It's about going all the way back to our core values, developing a quadrant two for ourselves, and putting in those big rocks and blocking off that time, and having that mindset of thinking proactively, thinking quadrant two, rather than being addicted to urgency. Distractions is one. Someone brought up the whole idea of distractions. Distractions is a very big time waster. It does spoil very often our whole time management structure. But of course, the whole idea of living in the moment deals with this issue of distractions. That's how we deal with distractions. We learn that ability of blocking out the distractions, blocking off the things that are important to us, and living in them completely, filtering out what happened before, not worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow, and trying to live and make the most of that moment that we've blocked off. That idea of living in the moment that we dealt with a few weeks ago is how we deal with the concept of distractions. But as we said, we do need to set ourselves up for success and not failure, and expectations is a very, very important one. And that was a very good feedback, because expectations often is what messes ourselves up. We create expectations that are beyond ourselves, and we set ourselves up for failure. And success breeds success. We need to take things in small doses so we set ourselves up to succeed. There's nothing greater, as you know, there's no greater feeling than actually having a daily schedule and having at the end of the day that actually worked, or 80% worked, even 50% worked. The feeling of the drive then, the inspiration, the incentive to keep going is great. And the way we do that is we block ourselves off the big rocks and we make our daily schedule, but we've got to do it with seichel. We've got to do it in a way where we don't set ourselves up for complete failure. Now, another important one is we talked about out of control external schedules, right? People talk about things that are out of control that come from the outside. So there's two things we have to bear in mind with this, and just drawing on what we've spoken about the last few weeks. First of all, yes, we do have things that are out of our control, and they do happen. And that goes back to the very beginning of understanding that the time management that we spoke about is the one based on chesed and gevurah. In other words, time management needs a very big discipline of gevurah, where we create boundaries and create blocks, but also needs a component of chesed, because to be a good human being and to be a human being that grows, we need that combination of chesed and gevurah. And therefore, we need to know that we're not in control at the end of the day. We're going to create a beautiful time management structure, but we have to always bear in mind that we're not in control. And therefore, out of control, external schedules will happen. Things that are completely beyond our control because they're divinely designed. And the strength we need to have when that happens is to always remember that we're not in control, not to get stressed, not to get down, not to get upset or angry, but to learn the art of refocusing. It's suddenly when we shift from gevurah into chesed, we shift from being disciplined and creating our boundaries with time to a complete mode of flexibility. Very different, right? But that's the power of the human being, as we always talked about, that combination of chesed and gevurah, where time management planning needs a sense of gevurah, but it also needs a sense of chesed, where we're able to flip from the almost not the rigidness, but the discipline of planning and blocking off times and creating boundaries to the mode of flexibility of chesed, where we're able to adapt to a new reality that day and not let it get us down. That's the one concept. However, sometimes the out of control external schedules are really in our control. In other words, we perceive them to be out of control because they're quadrant three. So they look like very urgent, but if we create the right boundaries, we can actually minimize them. Not every time someone comes to you and creates an emergency doesn't mean it's an emergency. In other words, sometimes we need to analyze that and assess that, as we've spoken about, to create a boundary and say, well, maybe it's not so urgent, maybe it could wait till later, maybe I can finish my quadrant two activity and wait till later and come to it. So this out of control external schedules that you mentioned, which is a problem with time management, divides into two. Divides into things that are really out of control, unexpected out of control, we just have to sit back and let God run the world. And then there's those things that we can respond to and we can create boundaries and have a discipline to, where we minimize the urgency and we reveal that it's not that urgent, it's actually in control, not out of control. One that we haven't spoken about, we alluded to, but people talk about fatigue. Now, where that is addressed from all the things that we've been talking about over the last few weeks is very simple. It's a quadrant two concept. Part of quadrant two has got to be taking care of yourself, right? And if we don't block off the times where we nurture ourselves means on all levels. We cannot be effective with other people. We cannot be effective in our roles as mothers, as fathers, as wives, as husbands, friend, employer, employees. We cannot be effective with other people if we are a worn out shmata, as I say in Yiddish, right? I don't know how best to say that, right? And by the way, that means on all levels. As we said, we spoke about in the beginning, a human being is a complex machine. We are made up of many, many different layers. Physical, spiritual, emotional, psychological, and so on and so forth. And therefore, part of our time management plan, part of our mission statement, part of our quadrant two activities, part of our value, has to be to nurture ourselves. And nurture ourselves means on all levels. We need to take care of our health. We need to take care of our nutrition. We need to take care of our emotional welfare, our spiritual welfare. We need to grow and study and grow as human beings. And when we do that as a quadrant two and we discipline to that, then we will become much more effective in the way we manage our time and the productivity that we give and deliver for other people. So yes, fatigue is a very, very big one when it comes to time management, but we've just got to be realistic and understand that the mindset has to change. We can't say we're going to be a hero and manage our time so effectively that we're doing everyone for everyone else except for ourselves, because then we don't do anything for anyone, not ourselves and not other people, properly and effectively. And therefore, that's an issue that must be addressed. And finally, people said planning. Planning is a big one, and that's what we've spent the last few weeks talking about, how to plan. Planning doesn't mean getting up in the morning and planning the day. Planning means having it multi-layered, starting with an overall mission statement, understanding our quadrant twos, the weekly plan, and then the daily plan. So these are the things people raised at the beginning, which are time wasters or issues with time management. And I think throughout the course, we've now been able to address those and hopefully have a much better perspective on how to deal with them. So I want to conclude with a thought that is relevant. It's connected to time management, and it's also connected to Pesach, which of course we're going to celebrate next week. A week and a half, is it? Don't want to scare you, sorry. Alright. And that will be a nice way to end it all. But before we do that, I want to just do two things. Because it's sort of a separate thought and it's just a concluding idea, I want to just interrupt and take a commercial and just talk about a few things. The first thing is just a little bit of housekeeping. Today is the last session. The next series is going to begin on the 11th of April. Okay, I just need to explain this because normally Binah's terms run according to the school terms. This year's school terms are all out of control. So I decided not to let other things distract us, and we'll just go with our own plan. But so we're going to start the 11th of April, and we're going to keep going. Now, it's actually a very long term. So what we're going to do is as follows. The first course we're going to do two courses, two series next term. One for 5 weeks and one also like for 4 or 5 weeks. So the first one will be from the 11th of April to the 23rd of May. But I just want to point out that in those 7 weeks, there's two Thursdays we're not going to do. One is a public holiday, I think it's Anzac Day, and the other one is Shavuot. Right, so we are starting the 11th of April. I think 3 weeks later there's a Thursday which is public holiday, and a few weeks later Shavuot. So the 11th of April, 23rd of May will be the next series. And the next series is called Getting on the Same Page. What do I do when people I know think differently to me? So if you live with people who all think the same as you, it's probably not for you, but I suspect that you all live with people that think differently to you, so come along. It should be exciting. After that series is finished, we'll start a new series, which I'll let you know the title of that series as we get closer. Now, just before all of that starts, just a few things that are happening right after Pesach. I just want to highlight you, and just to remind you, you probably won't remember if I tell you now, but just I'll remind you to look at the emails. The one is I'm going to be doing on the Thursday night of the 4th of April, which is 2 days after Pesach. In conjunction with GEMS, I'm going to be doing a one-off session in the evening for men and women on teenagers. Okay. Now, the only problem is that actually I haven't... it's going to be at someone's home. Actually, I haven't confirmed the address. So, it's the 4th of April at 8:15 for men and women. A session on teenagers entitled, What Happened to My Angel? Effective strategies for parents of teenagers. Okay, so that will be on the Thursday night. And please watch the emails or call the office just to confirm the address, because I'm only going to have the address confirmed the next day or two. Another thing on a very, very different note, on the Wednesday night, the 10th of April, please God, my mother's going to be here for Pesach, and she's staying a little bit after Pesach, so by popular request... Actually, it's a delegated request from my wife, but my popular request, she's going to be doing a cooking demonstration, and she's going to be doing two things. My wife's famous rugelach, which are actually her famous rugelach, and gefilte fish, which, as a really good Jewish son, I have to tell you that there isn't any gefilte fish like hers. So that'll be Wednesday night, the 10th of April. Again, watch the exact time and the emails. It's actually going to be done at Keset Torah School Kitchen, because it's got the facilities there for it. That's in Dover Heights. So it'll all be on the emails, so you can watch it. Otherwise, again, the Thursday morning series is going to be starting on the 11th on the 11th of April. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. The what? The cooking thing? Which one? Probably about 8 o'clock. I imagine. I'm not sure exactly. But
what do they do with the auction?
We're gonna raffle it off. Okay, we did the last time with the challah. Okay, the second thing before I conclude is I want to just talk about the raffle. Now, this is out of my comfort zone, but we all have to go out of our comfort zone. So I'm just going to spend a bit more time than I normally do and just put in a strong request. First of all, I want to thank everyone who's already jumped in and bought raffle tickets. But I just wanted to stress and emphasize that for those who might not be aware, the raffle that we do every year is actually a very significant fundraiser for Binah. You know, we've been in this building now for a year and a year and a half, I think it is. That bina itself has been going for, I don't know, 12 years, I think, 13 years. And thank God we've been booming, we've been progressing. Bina's reach is very, very wide. All the classes besides Thursday, almost 40 programs. We have, you know, the emails, the thousands of emails, the audios, etc. And I think for me, one of the greatest things about the bina experience is the diversity of how many different people that we touch. But I have to say that it does cost money. Now, the good news is that last year in 2000, I just want to share this with you because I probably haven't had the opportunity to share it with some of you. Last year in 2012, our fundraising activities were quite good. We have different fundraising activities. We have the monthly supporters, the raffle, the calendar, all the different things that we do throughout the year, the subscription. And because of the generosity of people like yourselves participating in these programs or the weekly contribution and very generous donors, etc., we raised a lot of money. We raised close to $440,000. But our budget is more like $530,000. So we're actually behind. We're doing well. People are excited. People are participating. But we are behind. And it is a lot of pressure because it's actually a small budget for what we put out. And it's not only myself, there's a team of people that give shiurim and classes and lots of stuff happens. And considering what actually goes out of this building and goes out of the organization, it's actually a small budget. But the fundraising is improving, but we're still behind. So I'm going to ask you, if you haven't yet, to please participate in the raffle or in any of the other fundraisers. If you've bought, consider buying another one or another few. If you bought a certain amount last year, considering increasing it this year. We would love this year to sell close to 1,000 tickets if we can. That's the goal. We're not going to sell more than 1,000 tickets because we want to keep the chances of winning at a good level. But if you can participate, or if only, of course, do what you can, everything helps, every bit helps, and will help us expand and keep going and delivering what I think is a beneficial program. So, having said that, if you do want to, please see the office or see Mrs. Letterman afterwards. Or you can do it online, actually. Now we have facilities to actually do it online. I want to finish with the following thought and put it all together this way. And something connected to Pesach. But actually not so much with Pesach, but the preparation to Pesach. Every week on Shabbat in the synagogue, we have what's called the weekly parsha. But around Pesach time, before Pesach that is, every year, just before Purim and after Purim, there are 4 weeks which are called the Arba Parshiot, the four special portions, where in Shul, in addition to the weekly Parsha, we read four special portions. Again, well known as the four portions, the four Parshiot. What are these four Parshiot? So on the first one, which is like 2 weeks before Purim, we read, in addition to the Parsha, we read about the mitzvah of giving a half a shekel, where in temple times there was a yearly tax where people had to give half a shekel every single year in order to facilitate the buying of sacrifices and the renovations of the temple and so on. And it was done around that time of the year, so to commemorate that, we read it around that time of the year, 2 weeks before Purim. The second one of the special parshiot is what we call Parashat Zachor, which is the portion where we remember Amalek. We remember the attack that the nation of Amalek did to the Jewish people when they came out of Egypt. When the Jewish people left Egypt, they were on top of the world. God split the Red Sea. They came out after the 10 plagues. Egypt was dealt a very, very mighty blow. The Jews came through the Red Sea, which was split. And after that, the Torah tells us that the nations, the neighboring nations, trembled. They trembled and they were scared to attack. They were scared to do anything, with the exception of one arrogant nation called Amalek, who broke the ice and attacked the Jewish people, and in a sense, in a way, sort of became the foundation of all future wars and all future persecution and anti-Semitism. And therefore, the Torah says that Amalek will always be held accountable for this. In fact, Haman came from Amalek as well in the Purim story. And there's a mitzvah to ultimately destroy the nation of Amalek and to remember what they did to us. And that's the portion we read on the Shabbat before Purim. The third one of the special portions is what we call Parashat Parah. It's the portion that deals with the red heifer. The red heifer was something we don't have today, but in the temple times, once again, if someone came into contact with a dead body and became impure, contracted an impurity, there was a process of purity, a purification, which had to happen through the red heifer. It was about taking a cow that was totally red, bringing it as a sacrifices, and then burning the skin and the parts of the animal, and then the ashes were mixed with spring water, and it was sprinkled on the person that was impure on the third day and on the seventh day, and there was a process that through that the person became pure and was then allowed once again to go into the temple and to bring sacrifices. So it was purification. And it's right around this time of the year, because this time of the year in temple times people would become pure because they wanted to bring the paschal lamb, the Korban Pesach, just before the Passover holiday. It's a very complicated mitzvah. In fact, it's a mitzvah which King Solomon says, we have in the Torah, we have mitzvot that are rational, mitzvot that we don't understand the reason. And King Solomon says, the wisest of all men, he said about the mitzvah of the red heifer, he said, even the irrational mitzvahs of the Torah, I have been able to give them some logic, with the exception of one. The parah adumah, the red heifer, is beyond me, even beyond King Solomon, and the reason of this mitzvah is completely unknown to the human being. But it's God's will, and that's how we know that's what works. That's the third portion. And the fourth portion is the one we just read last Shabbos, called Parashat HaChodesh, which is the parsha which deals with the very first mitzvah, as I mentioned right in the beginning, the very first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people as a nation, and that was the mitzvah to make a calendar, to the mitzvah that the month that we're in now, the month of Nisan, the month of Pesach, should be considered the first month of the cycle. It's called Chodesh HaRishon, and that we should establish a system of time, a calendar, which is based on a lunar cycle, and that will be the hallmark, the trademark of the Jewish nation, that we are compared to the moon, and we run our calendar according to the moon system. As well as other laws in that parsha to do with the paschal offering, etc. Now, when you have a look at these four portions, they're actually seemingly unrelated. Meaning they all come at this time of the year for independent reasons. The half a shekel comes because that was the time it was done in the temple. The Amalek thing comes because Purim is connected to Amalek, because Haman was a descendant of Amalek. The red heifer and the Chodesh comes because it's near Pesach. So they seem to be four unrelated portions which happened to fall at the same time of the year and became grouped and known as the four portions, the four parashiyot. But many commentaries talk about that. In fact, that cannot be the case, because we have a principle in Torah that when something happens, especially halachically or spiritually, it always has significance, it always has a reason. And therefore the fact that they do come together means that there must be a connection, there must be some link between these four parashiyot, even though the origin may be independent, but the fact they come together means that they do create some sort of formula. I wanted to share with you one which I heard, actually I didn't hear it directly from him, but it was an uncle of mine that told me in the name of my grandfather, Alav Hashalom, and he told me this thought. That he said the following, he gave the following explanation. He said like this, you know that they're coming up to Pesach, these four portions come before Pesach. And the festival of Pesach is about freedom. Freedom means when we sit down to the Seder on Pesach night, we celebrate freedom, but of course in Yiddishkeit, as I've mentioned many times, we don't celebrate anything historic, we re-experience it. So the concept of Pesach, therefore, is not just to remember freedom that took place many, many years ago, but it's more about spiritual freedom, about internal freedom. It's about freeing ourselves from our own prison. The Pesach Seder, as we talked about yesterday and Shir, the Pesach Seder is really about understanding that we all have our own Egypt, we all have our own prison. So I think I mentioned before that the word for Egypt in Hebrew is Mitzrayim. And the word Mitzrayim in Hebrew is Meitzar, a border, a prison. Right? And we all have our own Mitzrayim, meaning we all have those little walls that we build around us where we perceive and we think that we are bound by them and we cannot go beyond them, which of course is an error, because a human being can always grow and always go beyond ourselves. And therefore, Yetziyat Mitzrayim, going out of Egypt, is the concept of going out of our own prison, of our own Mitzrayim. Now, we need to do this every day and every minute and every part of our life, but there are certain times of the year where there's an energy that's conducive to take the next jump, and that's Pesach. The concept of the Seder, when we sit down and we experience freedom, the idea is to reflect on what are our own prisons, what are those things that control us that shouldn't be, what are those things that are standing in the way of our growth, on all levels, that are not letting us progress to the next step or to the next level, and understanding how we need to go out of our own Mitzrayim and take the next step. And everyone's Yetziyat Mitzrayim, by the way, is different. Everyone's Exodus is different because everyone's Mitzrayim is different. Everyone's Egypt is different. It's all relative. But it is about going a little bit beyond who we are and taking the next step into better growth, into better development. So the four parashiyot the four portions we read this time of the year are a lead up to Pesach. Because what these four portions represent are four critical things that are very powerful, but yet very destructive if they control you and we don't control them. Four things. What are these four things? So the first thing is represented in Shkalim, the parsha, the portion of a half a shekel. What that represents is the pursuit of wealth or the pursuit of materialism. Wealth, blessing, sustenance is a very powerful thing. Money is a very powerful thing. But not if it controls us. The Talmud tells us that when a person falls into the trap of greed, where nothing is enough, and like the sentence the Talmud uses is, he who has 100 wants 200, he who has 200 wants 400. Whereas the ethics of the fathers tell us that who is a really wealthy person, one who is satisfied with what they have. In other words, it's about understanding that what we have is a gift from God. What we have is meaningless unless we use it for something positive, unless we use it to bring better purpose and meaning into ourselves, into our lives and the environment around us. If that doesn't happen, then the wealth or the materialism or the pursuit of materialism consumes us, takes us over and controls us and destroys the human being. As the ethics of the Father says in a different place, Pirkei Avot, we mentioned this before, that there are three things that destroy the human being. One of them is greed. It says jealousy, greed, and the pursuit of glory. Right? But greed can destroy the person. And that's why the first thing we read in these first four portions is the machatzit ha-shekel, or half a shekel, to teach us that what we have is only half. It's insignificant. It's not complete. It's not perfect unless we use it for something positive, something constructive, and we learn not to be controlled by it, but rather to control the gift that God gave us and use it for something positive. The second thing is power. Power is a very, very, very important one. And let's understand how that works into the second parsha. The second parsha is the parsha of Amalek, where the Jews came and they were victorious and they were freed from Egypt. And yet, the nation of Amalek, which the mystics tell us represent the concept of complete arrogance and complete negative control that need to control other people. The fact that there was a free nation, that the fact that they were untouchable, was something that was unacceptable to Amalek. And therefore Amalek had to show their power by attacking a nation that had just been so miraculously freed and so miraculously victorious. And therefore the second parsha we read is about the destruction and the destructiveness of bad power. And understand the power of power. In other words, the power of control. That concept that we talk about so often, that control is a very good thing, provided it's exercised in self-control. Amalek did not look inward. Amalek looked outward. They looked to control others rather than to control themselves. And ultimately, they became a nation who at that time appeared so powerful, but ultimately is a nation which God says has to be eliminated and destroyed. Because that type of abuse, that type of power is something which is completely negative. It's the root of all evil. And therefore, we need to learn that in the second parsha to understand that our second prison, the prison that so often holds us back, is that need to control what is around us. And we need to learn that and go out of our Mitzrayim to reverse that. That it shouldn't be our controlling of that which is around us, but rather controlling ourselves, which allows us to go beyond ourselves and to grow and to develop as human beings. The third prison is the prison of intellect, the prison of rationale. And this is an interesting one. Because one of the greatest gifts that God gave the human being is the power to think, the power to intellectualize. And yet so often we use it against us, not for us. We use it to become a slave to our own intellect. How many times do people say that I'm not prepared to engage in something because I don't understand it? And as human beings, we need to understand that our intellect, as powerful as it is, and as powerful as the human being is as an intellectual being, but we're still finite beings. Our intellect is very mortal, it's very, very finite, and can be very limited. The parsha of the Parah Aduma, the red heifer, teaches us that there are things we don't understand. The ultimate irrational mitzvah is the one of red heifer. It's the humility, because intellect can breed an incredible amount of arrogance, because if I don't understand it, it must be wrong. If I don't understand it, I'm not prepared to engage in it. Parah Aduma, the red heifer, teaches us, know that we need as human beings to not let that control us. Intellect is amazingly powerful, but not if it limits us, not if it gives us arrogance. And therefore it teaches us that there are things we need to do because we don't understand. We need to have the humility, which by the way is the same idea as matzah. The whole idea of matzah, that we eat on Pesach night is the concept of humility, because matzah doesn't rise. The reason that on Pesach matzah is so important and chametz is so despised, so to speak, is because chametz rises. Rises, that rising represents the arrogance, the sense of negative self. Matzah is humility. Matzah means that there's a certain level of subservience that I can submit to a higher reality, to something that is greater than me. And therefore, I sometimes have to understand that I defer to a higher reality. In the case of Paraduma, of course, it means deferring to a godly power, which is beyond us. So, we have the prison of pursuit of materialism, the prison of power, and the prison of intellect. And finally, we come to the fourth parsha, which of course has got to do with our topic. And that's why I brought this in today, because that's what we've been talking about for the last 7 weeks. And that's the prison of time. The mitzvah of HaChodesh is to sanctify time, to create a purpose to time, to take a cycle of time and make it mean something. Because time is a gift, but time can also be a prison. Because if we don't manage our time correctly, and we drown in the cycle of time, and we go around in circles, not knowing where we're going, not knowing what we're supposed to do, not having a direction, not having a plan, not having a purpose, then time becomes our worst enemy. It consumes us rather than us controlling the time. And therefore the fourth parsha we read is the parsha of time, the parsha of HaChodesh, where we learn to sanctify time. We learn that time is a gift given to us, but for us to use and to control properly, not for it to control us. And that of course happens through the plan, having values, having goals, having a direction, and making sure that the use of time is one that are based on those goals and based on those values. When we have the lead up to Pesach, we understand those prisons, and we understand that going out of our prison means to not let those things control us, then we're ready to sit down to the Seder. We're ready to experience our own exodus. We're ready to make sure that we can do more with the gifts that God has given us, the material gifts that God has given us. We can learn to control ourselves and go beyond our comfort zone. We can learn sometimes to be humble and not to trust our intellect only, and we can learn to manage our time a lot better. So on that note, let me just say two things. First of all, next week, this is the last one of the series, but there are two nighttime classes next week on Pesach. The one is with Rabbi Chaitin on Monday night at 8:15 over here for men and women, called The Why of Passover Part 2. The other one is Tuesday night. I'm going to be giving one again for men and women over here called The Kabbalistic Seder. We're going to explore some mystical ideas to do with Pesach and the Seder. Should be very exciting. And let me just wish every single one of you a very, very kosher and happy Pesach, and hopefully we'll all experience a bit of freedom together and take the next step. Have a wonderful Yom Tov and a wonderful day.